Okay, commissioners, we have board time Wednesday, October 8th at 2:10 p.m. First item on the agenda, we have a couple of minutes, September 24th and October 1st. Hopefully you've had a chance to look them over.
Does anybody have any questions in the minutes? Two meetings.
Give me a minute.
I read them. I don't have any problem. I make a motion, and then David correct them if there's some.
You make the motion. I'm good. Second.
Yeah, we broke this consecutive streak of having to fix stuff.
No issue.
Yeah,
everybody's happy with that. Yeah. Motion's been made.
Yeah, now second.
For the 24th and the 1st.
All right. All those in favor of adopting those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're good. So, this is here. You want to jump over to, oh, never mind, the next thing on the agenda.
So, since we have Anna here, can we reverse the radio and the home business ordinance? So, Axel, you're the lead on this?
Well, yeah, and I'm going to turn it over to Mark. So, you guys know we've been working for some time, and you had me kind of working on your behalf through the CRESA board and on the CRESA board on the radio replacement project. It's a huge project. It's been a number of years, and I'm going to turn it over to Mark because he's got the best sort of him and Anna combined historical context on where we've been and then kind of where we are.
Okay. I thought for Commissioner Barnes' benefit, I'd kind of bring him up to speed just real briefly on what the radio replacement project is. And it starts really about 2010. We had the two events happen. One, the current system that we have for our 911, that CRESA operates under, was coming to an end of life. At the same time, there were certain technological advances that required us to move from that system, which was an analog system, to a digital system. And so this process that we began to evaluate systems started probably four years ago, back in 2010. And at that time, the numbers that we were getting were all over the place. Huge numbers to replace the system, from a low of $40 million to a high of $80 million. It was just a huge range. And so we started doing a couple things at that time. One, we made the effort to start putting aside the excess funds that would come into CRESA through the users, through the different revenues that we had, into a radio replacement fund. Okay, so that started, and we've been very successful at being disciplined, keeping our operating costs, and I say our, I've been involved with this.
Well, take ownership.
CRESA's operating costs down through their budgetary process and creating this reserve.
How much has been saved so far?
Right now, as of today, we're about $8.5 million.
Oh, that's pretty
$8.5 million, which is an important number, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. The other thing that happened is 2 years into this process, we were the beneficiaries of the advancement in technologies created more competition within the field. In other words, we started with really only one viable vendor to choose from, and other competition came in and helped drive the price down.
More bang for the buck.
Well, the same bang for less dollars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Same bang for less dollars. So what we did is we went through an evaluation process. Were we even in the ballpark of what we could afford, and would it be able to replace and give us what we needed? So there was a group that was formed that included the municipalities throughout the county, Vancouver, Clark County, and it was called the Public Radio Group. And there were many meetings that went through this Public Radio Group. And the representation all determined at that time we had to come up with a plan that we could afford without any new revenues. There would be no sales tax, no additional taxes or fees created. We had to come up with this plan and determine if we could afford to replace the system. And at that time, a model was created, a finance model was created that put us in a ballpark of somewhere between $20 and $25 million that we would be able to afford if we could get the price to that level. So we invited several of these players in to give us kind of a high-level look at what is it that it would cost for us to replace the system. And it was very encouraging. The results of those inquiries came back that we were in that ballpark somewhere between $20 and $25 million. And because of that, we authorized Cressa to hire a consultant. The consultant went out, did all the specs, helped write the RFP, evaluated the RFPs that came back, and this is, again, a long process. It sounds like, well, we could do this in a week, but it's taken years. Mm-hmm. And now we're to the point where we've evaluated the RFPs, and we're now in contract negotiations with the winning bidder.
Okay. That RFP, did it include price? It must have, because you already got the specs, right?
Yeah. Of course it includes price. And we were very pleased with all of the RFPs that came back because they put us in that ballpark that we expect, where we expected them to be. And we were able to make some requests. One of the requests that we made in the RFP is we wanted the cost of the system over a 10-year period so that we would have the maintenance, the operation, the system upgrades, the software, everything.
So we don't get nickel and dime to death after we sign on the initial.
Exactly. And at the end of 10 years, we would have state-of-the-art. Hmm. We don't want to end up 10 years and have to go through this whole thing. And again, that came into that was all included in this process. So what we have now, I want to kind of explain to you the bid that came back, where we're at on paying for this, and what the county's responsibility is at this point. The bids came back, all of them were in about the $24 million range, which is within those parameters that we had hoped for. Mm-hmm. A large portion of that, and I'm just using round numbers here, about $10 million of that is to replace what's called infrastructure. The infrastructure are radio towers, hardware, the software to run the hardware. It's the system-wide piece of that. So that cost is about $10 million. The ongoing maintenance piece, in other words, the upgrades, the new equipment, everything to maintain the infrastructure is about $8 million, okay? That leaves a $6 million piece, which is what the broad term of that is the cost of the radios themselves, the radio replacement. The county's share of that, in other words, for us to replace our radios and make them compatible with the new system, with the new technology, with, you know, digital technology, our cost to the county is about $2.7 million. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is we have the money, or will have the money through our current revenue streams to finance the infrastructure. And I think that's good news. It's great news. Because 4 years ago, we didn't have that money in place. Now we have it in place. The ongoing maintenance, the ongoing 10-year plan, we have that money in place. Okay. So that leaves the portion in the middle for the radios that each of the users, all the component agencies of Cressa, have to determine how to fund. So, for example, Vancouver has to determine how they're going to fund their radios. Clark County has to determine how they're going to fund their radios. All of the fire agencies and the smaller municipalities, everyone's responsible for paying for their own radios. Currently, the discussion right now is, in order for us to maximize our discount, to maximize the purchase price of these radios, we want to buy them as a group.
Sure.
Okay. Some of the entities already have the money in hand to pay for those through grants or through whatever mechanisms they have. As a county, we'll have to make the decision of, do we pay for those out of pocket in a lump sum? Do we participate in the finance? Well, let me backtrack on that a little bit. The main purchase of these would be through a single purchase, through a single financing plan, which we would become a part of. But we would have the option to pay those over a period of time, or we would have the option of paying those up front. We would build that into the contract with the
In other words, there's a third party in there that serves as a financing. Yeah.
The vendor that we're going with, which is Motorola, has their own financing company.
They offer terms.
It's a capital lease.
It's a financing company. However, we haven't determined that we will go with them yet. Once we find out what their terms are, we will send it off to our treasurer's office, and he'll say, "Can we beat this deal?" So we haven't selected them. However, mm-hmm. the concept of paying for them up front and then having the flexibility to pay them off as we go in the manner that we want to pay them off will be built into the contract. Mm-hmm.
That would be the two questions I'd ask. If you pay up front all the money versus paying it on a contract, which is the cheapest way to go?
Well, obviously, if you have, let's say everyone buys them, we would maximize our discount.
Yes.
Some entities would just pay them off right away.
Right.
They would have no interest incurred.
Isn't there some attractive incentives for actually purchasing by the end of the year?
Yes. This financing plan, whatever it is, we'll have formulated and ready to go this year, by the end of this year. So what the negotiations are, the final discussions are at this point is what is the best mechanism for the county? And that will be up to mm-hmm. us as a county to decide. Mm-hmm. How do we pay for our share of that purchase?
And surely the financing team has recommendation.
As soon as we know, we'll take it to them for discussion. Because we haven't even got to that point yet. I mean, we just, as of today, finalized the preliminary final inventory of what we need to buy. Hmm. I mean, that's how quickly, once we got the RFP back yeah. and the pricing, it's moving quickly at this point.
Yeah, you've got radios of different capabilities, and there are certain users of radios that don't need all the capability that you uh-huh. can pay for.
Right.
You know, the first responders need all the capability, but Public Works may not.
But they can always upgrade those. Motorola yeah. can always upgrade their systems.
Well, the initial purchase,
right.
for example, and I think that's a good point. Are the majority of what we need to purchase, in fact, the only thing that we would be purchasing would be what our sheriff's office needs. Everything else that we have in our inventory, the company that Motorola has agreed to upgrade free. So any of the upgrades we're going to get free. However, the sheriff has older equipment. It's not upgradable to the new digital technology.
Sure.
So
in other words, all the work that's gone into it so far has been move the furniture out, mask everything off, get ready, and now we're ready to figure out how you're going to pay for the paint. That's the easy part, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of where we're at in this. And really, the only question, the only thing that the county really needs to answer is that radio. How do we buy our own radios? How do we pay for our own radios?
Are you aware?
Everything else is.
The basic kind of options that we have off the top of your head. I know it's not researched, but can we? Are we in a position to come up with a workable solution this year?
We have $6 million.
But the $6 million is for
over time.
All of the radios.
System, yeah.
Our share of that is
2.2.
Is 2.7.
Yeah. So that's why I asked
Three.
For those cheaper.
But we have six
to do it
in the fund today.
No.
That's for everybody.
Yeah. I don't want you to get confused. Mm-hmm. What Cresta has available and what the way the $24 million system is, the $10 million up front is for infrastructure. Cresta has that available. The ongoing maintenance and operations will be funded through the regular cash flow streams. It's the radio purchase that we own as a county that we have to pay for.
2 point something million.
2 point something.
So are you fairly confident that we can come up with something between this, that the, we can complete our purchase by the end of the year here? Is that what the goal is?
Well, the agreement will be reached. The actual timing of when the money goes in and out is still, you know, that will depend on the terms of the financing. I can't answer all those questions. I'm bringing this to you now so that when we know those questions, or we can answer those questions, you'll be ready to.
We had a meeting, and we just want to make sure the board is where we are. But mm-hmm. There's two ways, and Mark and Ann will correct me if I'm wrong. There's two major ways this issue is going to continue to be in front of the board for the rest of this year. One, I think because Cressa uses our procurement process and Mike Westerman,
right.
The board has to actually authorize and approve the contract award.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see it then, and then you'll see through the budget process Mark and the finance team's package to approve for this 2.5, how to buy the radio still.
We'll come forward to you with a recommendation of whether it's lump sum, whether it's over a period of time, however that is, based on the terms that we evaluate and the money we have available.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to look at the resources. It has to come from general fund, and as you know, general fund is always, you know, precarious.
It's going to go back up.
So. Sorry.
Roughly, we're back up to 52.
Yeah, we'll be at the beginning of 15, yes.
Yeah.
But and you're so far down the line now that you couldn't.
Well, this is a must-do. Well, this is a must-do.
This is a project that has, like I said, and I understand, I wanted to try and bring you up to speed, because this has been a project that has been processed for 4 years, and we are now, I know it seems like it's coming fast, and maybe, you know, maybe not fully aware of where we're at on this process, but it has a long history to it. But we're now getting to where we're going to be putting pen on paper, and I wanted to let you as commissioners know that we need to be prepared to do that. We're just a small part of the radio purchase, not a small part, 2.7 million is not small, but that is our out-of-pocket commitment of a $24 million system, and it's going forward. The system's going forward. We don't want to be the ones with our sheriff's office that can't talk to the system. I mean, we just can't do that. So.
Okay, sounds great.
Yeah.
You'll come. You'll find.
We're going to
find this team. We'll come up with something.
Yeah. As soon as we know more terms, more options, we can bring that information to you, and and we can make a recommendation on what we think is best.
Yeah.
It may be that, you know, if. You know, we start through the financing plan, and then at some point we recommend now it's time to pay it off or something. I'm not sure how that
yeah.
works yet.
Okay. So the decision looks like it needs to be done before the end of the year, and the actual money coming from Clark County is going to be sometime in 2015?
Probably 15.
Okay.
Yeah. But you'll need to be aware that these will be coming, as Axel said, it'll be coming through the procurement process, because we are the financial agent. Cressa. So Mike Westman's been thoroughly involved in going through the RFP process, and so really it's on behalf of Cressa that you'll be doing that.
Okay.
And then the next piece is, if we come to you with a finance plan, whatever that may be for the radios, that you're aware that this is our equipment. These are our radios, not Cressa. These are the county's assets that we'll be buying.
You own the system.
Well, Cressa will own the system. We'll own those radios.
Radios.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anna, can you come in?
It's
thank you.
You know that we have options with that. And, you know, it costs money to borrow.
Thank you, Mike.
And when we have money in our reserves, we're better off using our own money and finance.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
But I get a little fidgety when someone says you better buy it today because the price is going to go up tomorrow.
You've heard that before.
I thought you were buying a car there for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, next item on the
home
agenda.
Home business.
Yep, home business ordinance.
I'm not going to give you one.
I got one.
No, that's the proposal, and certainly that's what it's going to look like. I have, since about 10 o'clock, I think, I can't remember, it may have been 11, We have not had access to the internet or the network.
I can report that the email is back up.
Okay. Well, I can't get my file, so I can't print your file, but I can tell you that I've written a draft resolution that pretty much mirrors what Peter has proposed.
Great.
Assuming this is what the board wants to go forward with, understand there's two steps. That there's a couple things we have to do going forward with this. You're going to have to, number one, we have to give notice to the Department of Commerce. We have to give them 6 months' notice before this becomes effective. We also have to do a SEPA checklist on this to notify the public. And I've said it before, and I got to say it again, it's important to understand that having unlimited employees potentially creates a real issue if the use on anybody's property, the whole ability to defend home occupations in residential areas is based on our argument that these are accessory uses, that the primary use of the property is residential, it's zoned mm-hmm. residential. These businesses are accessory to the primary use of as residential, and so we can allow that. When you get enough employees on some of these, you potentially set up the situation where these are really commercial uses on residentially zoned property. At that point, our ordinance is really in jeopardy, and so I've been concerned about this ordinance, but I just want to say up front that there's a real risk with it. That if somebody wanted to challenge it, that's what they're going to say. They're going to argue that having 30 employees on in a residential piece of property when somebody buys 5 acres out in Brush Prairie, that they didn't buy that acreage with the idea of having a business next to them. And we're trying to balance the interests of both parties while creating jobs. And these two are going to become a little more conflicting the bigger these businesses get. So I've spoken with Peter, and we've talked about the fact that there are limitations about the amount of accessory structures that will help keep these from, hopefully, help keep these from getting too big. And you also have limitations on the amount of the site that can be covered by business uses. And that should help keep the size down. Now, that won't resolve the issues for some of the existing businesses, because there are some that are illegal that are already in existence, and those ones we'll have to work through regardless. But going forward, that's what this will look like. We're going to remove the employee limitation. We are going to include a requirement, I think that's in Peter's version, that they have to provide parking for those employees who come in on site. But otherwise, it will have all the ordinance will remain the same except for the employee limit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got it. And we're not differentiating between on-site employees and employees that are working out there somewhere but employed by that company.
No.
Off-site. Great. Okay.
Now, remember, we're only really writing this up to deal with rural major businesses. Minor businesses, which have a much lower level of involvement with the county, are not going to change. I mean, Peter didn't propose those changes, and I'm not either. And partly, that's to reflect the fact that they're minor for an obvious reason, and we're not getting involved, or those don't require almost any review. Some are exempt. Some require very minor levels of county review, and of their nature should be very modest in the degree of impacts they have. So we're only going after the ones that tell us they're going to be big or bigger and go through county review.
Okay. Question I would ask you is on 40th Street that goes between Stapleton Road and Andreessen Road, right now there's been several complaints in here to the county. Kevin Pridemore's went out and investigated it. There's a group of individuals that 24/7 use car haulers to bring carloads of vehicles into that neighborhood, unload them, repair them in what used to be a swimming facility right up against SR 500. I don't know how many complaints that have been lodged in here. I can take you out there and show you. The people in the neighborhood cannot sleep at night because of these car haulers running in and out of there. They've turned it into the IRS for business. They've turned it into the state of Washington and everything, and the car are still rolling in and out of there right past the Ford garage They bring the cars in there, they repair them, load them up, haul them back out of there. I can take you out there and show you. I can take you out there and show you. So, how many other businesses are like that right within, right next to Vancouver Ford, basically?
So, did you catch what Peter just said? That example is within the city limits of Vancouver.
It's not the city limits, it's the county.
They're north.
That's in the county.
40th Street and Stapleton?
Yeah.
It might
Street.
Well be in the county.
It's in the county.
The county line shifts around SR 500, and you actually have to look at it.
County.
I don't recall.
We can look at it. Yeah. But again, this doesn't create any kind of exemption for that situation. You still have to get a permit.
Yeah.
There's still screening requirements to make sure your neighbors aren't impacted. There's still the
But that's for new. That's for new people, Peter, that's starting. It's not for ones that are existing that are already been violating everything.
If they're operating a business in the rural areas and they don't have a permit, they're required to get a permit, whether they have an existing business or not.
Well, just to clarify one thing, it's true that you can't get any protected rights if you're operating illegally. So if you've had a business for 20 years and it's been illegal for 20 years, when you come into compliance, you actually have to come into compliance not only with the laws that were in effect 20 years ago, you have to come into compliance with today's laws. And so if you build a house illegally, for example, you actually have to meet today's building codes. And that would be true with regard to zoning. So if that business came in today, and we'll say it didn't have any it didn't have an occupancy for the buildings they were storing the vehicles in or wrecking the vehicles in, and it didn't have stormwater facilities, it'd have to comply with today's codes. So we would actually enforce against them, but in terms of the nature of the uses, the use itself could be allowed if it complied with the rural standards. Now, that's not a rural area, but you could have a use something like that. It would not, again, there's coverage limits, the amount of the building space that's available are limited. There are limitations that would hopefully reduce the impacts, and then we have noise standards that they have to comply with. So at nighttime, it seems to me we would have issues. I'd be curious to know what Kevin says about why this isn't a nuisance for the night, or the noise that's coming from that at night.
Well, they've tried several times to do enforcement on them.
Have you talked to Kevin?
Huh?
Have you talked to Kevin about it?
No, I'm not the neighborhood.
You better hurry up and talk to him, because under the new system that's coming,
right,
you can't talk to him.
Oh, yeah, I can. That's a bunch of crap.
I'm talking about freeholds.
I haven't heard the proposal. I haven't heard your term sum up the charter that way, but I agree.
Well, I think you're opposed to the new freeholders.
Well,
charter.
I'll take Peter out there and show him the best.
No,
well,
talk
the
Kevin
point
and see what's been written up.
That you just covered, Chris, at the end, is the sound. It sounds like their main complaint is the nuisance noise. And that is something that can be enforced today if there is a problem. And our code enforcement does that. And our sheriff can do that. So if there's a problem there and they're over the threshold and they're not being enforced, then that is a problem. We need to enforce it. The excuse of we got the code, but they're not doing anything about it. It doesn't matter at that point what the code says if we're not enforcing it. We have to enforce.
Follow up.
Businesses are out on 72nd that don't comply. You're going to go out there and put them out of business then, David?
No. What I'm saying is code enforcement is complaint-driven.
If you have neighbors to a
business that's making a lot of noise at night, the proper response is to call 911, say, I got a problem here, and they'll come out and respond.
All right. Kevin's been working on it, talk to Kevin.
So Mr. Problem Solver, have at it.
I left all the other criteria in place that will limit the size that a business can grow to. It's just by doing this, you're saying that we're not going to limit your ability to grow based on adding another employee or two or three, whatever it is that you can accommodate in that approved work area.
And so there's really two topics that are related to this. One is the noise that applies to everything, and that's a blanket that covers all this stuff. That's already covered. The other one is right now, the way current, we are serving as the business prevention department with our limits. I did talk with the fellow that Susan Rasmussen pointed us to from the Department of Commerce this morning, and the Department of Commerce loves the idea of us taking this number off and allowing for business. So the risk is we allow for too much business. Well, hopefully we'll have a balance here because there is a permitting and a process to get through this. And so we certainly want to correct the business prevention code that we already have.
But David and Tom, when does a neighborhood become a neighborhood? When does it become a business, half neighborhood, half business, half crazy? I mean, people running in and out, pumping gas or lubing cars or doing body fender work right next to your mansion out there. Would you like that if somebody walked up to Tom's place and started manufacturing and body rebuilding and doing auto body work and stuff next to you guys?
There's got to be some
rules that neighborhoods are neighborhoods where people have schools in and not are free of the business. These people that don't want to start legitimate, David, you always talk about legitimate business people, small business people, they need to be a business if they're going to be a business and not try to, and I know everybody starts out of their garage. Tektronix started out of their garage. I know the guy was one of the original partners. But that was 20, 30, 40 years ago. This is today, for God's sake. And the fire rules are different. The police rules are different. There's got to be some balance where people that live in a neighborhood don't have to be interrupted by trucks roaring by or people using their homes for auto body, replacing glass windows, sheet metal shops, electrical shops. It's crazy. I just think that we're...
Okay,
we're,
I think you're I talking think way over, beyond overdoing. What we're talking about
I
here.
I think we're overdoing it.
Because I think these are all conditional use.
No.
Depending upon
they're permitted.
Well, depending upon where they are, the impact cannot be. That's what I call it conditional. So if you're located in such a way that you negatively impact your neighbors, you can't exist.
Well, there are some impact. It depends on the nature of the impact. For example, if you have a fair number of vehicle traffic mm-hmm. coming in, that kind of the vehicles that are associated with employees coming in and out, or if they come in, pick up a company vehicle and leave, those four trips, those are part of what you're going to live with, and they are going to be some kind of a neighborhood impact at some level. Again, our goal is to try and keep the size of this so that we can defend it legally. If these start getting too big, there really will be a problem, because the point will be you'll have people saying these are businesses that belong in commercial areas. If they're accessory, if they're small enough that you can say that the main use of the property is still residential, that's going to be our linchpin for defending this.
That's right.
I agree.
This is a draft that we.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. We'll have planning do a SEPA checklist on this, and we'll notify the Department of Commerce, and we'll start going through the process and get this on your agenda.
Yep.
When is it going to be on the agenda?
Well, like I said, we have to give six. It can't go into effect for 6 months because we have to notify the Department of Commerce and give them the opportunity to comment. This is a development regulation that's subject to GMA, and so we have to give notice to them, and then we'll have to go through SEPA.
Public comment, too, yeah.
Right. We'll go through SEPA comment, and we'll have a process for the public to give input on this.
We'll do that at the hearing.
Well, part of it will happen at the hearing. One of the issues is whether or not this is a development regulation is going to be subject to going to the PC, but I'll take a look at that.
Well, what we're primarily talking about and the thing that's been in question are these lawn care companies where they come in, pick up the equipment, and they leave. They're not working on site.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these primarily are that we're concerned about that have a larger number.
There are a lot of different employers that work in the rural area. I mean, we know most of them because mm-hmm. there's a share on all kinds of properties. 50th Avenue has a share. 72nd Avenue has a share. There are some on Northeast 10th Avenue. you're right. I mean, you know, generally, a lot of them are landscaping. Some share of them are excavating and contractor companies.
Mm-hmm.
We get a variety, and some of the issues you face are just the kind you mentioned. The guy comes in and drives the truck. Some of them are people who start their diesels up in the morning and they warm
them up.
That's
not happening in the neighborhood.
Well, sure it could.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, they're contractors.
If you have a truck, it's a good chance you've got 1 to 10 acres there, and you're in a rural area and not the city.
Well, it has to be. This is a rural area ordinance. You're right. In that sense, it will be in the rural area.
Okay.
But I'm just saying these are rural residential zones.
Okay.
It's in the county that's rural.
Yeah. So I want to move forward with the final.
Okay. We'll get it. We'll get it through. We're going through the process.
I'll keep.
Yeah. I've got. I'm not quite done with it.
We're not writing it now.
No, but I still there's a little bit more to say about this. You mentioned times have changed. We're not 40 years ago.
That's right.
But business still starts up small.
I know that.
And they start up in homes with minimum overhead because you got to get over that hump so that you get positive cash flow. And the idea of accommodating that where these businesses can incubate to grow and then finally find another home someplace else, we are accommodating that. That's a really good thing for us to do. I went through that myself. U.S. Digital used to be in our home.
Okay,
and we got to the...
You don't have to convince him now. We have more things to go and steps and maybe even a work session. So we don't need to write it and solve it today.
Are we under a time constraint?
Yes, 3:30.
For what?
We lose my administrator.
Yeah. I've got an event to attend, but
we're not. This is not a workshop.
Okay.
No.
If you want a work session on, we'll have a work session.
I still have a question. You mentioned 6 months. Is that for the Department of Commerce to respond?
They have a right to make comments for during that 6 month period. So there's a state law in GMA under 3678 that says the ordinance can't be effective for 180 days following your notice to them.
Okay, so if they respond sooner,
the ordinance says 180 days.
It's a hard 6 months
from
what?
From the day we give them notice. So I've just written this today. I can send out the notice today.
Okay, let's get that notice going
as
soon as possible so we don't waste any of that time.
Sure.
And the other thing is, if we were to write this ordinance from scratch, I assume this would be a similar process. This is a one entry and one table amendment. Do you need to go through this full-blown process as though we're writing it from scratch?
For all of our development regulations, yeah. When you amend your development code, this is a part of our zoning code. If this were the building code or some other aspects that aren't the same as this,
mm-hmm.
Our fee ordinances would not be required to go through the same process, but this is part of your development code, yes. The answer
Whose development code is that? Is that county?
It's Clark County's.
So we put that constraint on ourselves that says we require 6 months notice before...
No. The 6 months is a state law.
Okay.
I'm saying the number limit on the number of employees is a county limit.
Okay. I'm just thinking whatever we can do to move that along, give them notice as soon as possible.
I'll do it.
That'd be great, because if the time clock needs to run, I'd rather be... Never get her done. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. That's all we have on the old business. Ed, do you have anything for the good of the order?
You what?
Do you have anything you'd like to bring up, discuss?
Got to get more work on this side of the river.
That's what we're trying to do. It's going to take 6 months.
Yeah. The other thing, if you're going to do that too, you need to start making sure that all these people start putting
before you go.
Their their companies and their contractors' licenses on the sides of their trucks and their vehicles.
That's good business anyway, right? They want to keep word of mouth,
out there running
build a good name.
On the weekend, the cheating.
Okay. Do you have anything new?
Nope.
Can you tell me where we are with the Bolin property?
I just received notice from Ken Paul from Survey, and he said they're about done with the legal description. So as soon as we do, we'll prepare the license agreement, and we'll get it to Mr. Bolin.
And I got a question. This is a good time?
Yes.
The signs, the no parking signs for the 6th Street, how are we doing on that? Do we need to do anything, decision?
Sixth Street.
What are you talking
about? Peter knows
about
it.
I'll follow up with the, I can't remember her name, the staff person that went out there and was in charge of that. I can follow up with her.
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, what that is, over by Life Point Church and the new Costco at one at First Street and 192nd Avenue, there's the residential neighborhood just about 1,000 feet north of that. It backs up to Union High School. It's a dead-end street. And for some reason, the high schoolers are electing to park 50, 60 cars in that neighborhood, and it's driving the neighbors crazy, instead of the big parking lot that the school has. I don't know if they're charging the students to park there or something, but the neighbors have pretty much all banded together and say, we want no parking signs in our neighborhood. You're killing our neighborhood. And so our staff has gone out there. Supportive of the idea of supporting the neighbors, and they can't do it until we say yes.
I think
that
we
sounds
talk
like
about
his own business.
And I'll tell you why. WSU, we had the same thing,
yep.
And I think we need to take a closer look at it. Took us 2 years to figure it out and remove the parking, and then next year we're giving them back. So I think we need to have more discussion about that.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you want to say something, Chris?
Well, the only issue you run into is you have equal protection concerns, because what will happen is if you put up no parking signs, then the question becomes, do the residents get to park there?
Yeah,
so you,
they
well,
do.
But
no.
But the answer for the students is, or if they're over 18, the answer for the students is, wait a minute, we're all the same. We're all drivers. We're all motorists. We all pay license fees. How come they get to park here and we don't? And Washington, I can tell you the University of Washington has taken this issue on, but there are at least a few older cases now. There's no real newer cases other than I think there may be one out of Seattle that I'll look at. But at least there is a real argument that if you're going to ban parking, you have to ban everybody.
What we did, though, in the WSU case is we said
permit.
Permit parking
right.
only,
and then
we
give
issue free permits to the residents.
And that's one way to duck the issue.
By the time we got those, it took us almost 2.5 years. Because
yeah.
For a year and a half, every week I said, I need permits, I need permits, I need permits. It took me a year and a half before we started to get the permits. The year before that, they weren't allowed to park in front of their own house. And when the ladies come over and have their Tupperware party, no way. So you need to decide what we're going to do and how to resolve it and who's going to issue the permit and so on. So
okay.
We just don't put up no parking signs.
Yes, and I. Mm-hmm. It sounds like certainly we don't want to repeat that.
That's right.
We don't want to have another 18 to 24 months lead mm-hmm. time to try to solve this problem. And the question is, how formal do we need to be in order to equip staff and the neighbors to be able to work together to end up with an agreeable solution that they can determine on their own and just say, we'll bless it ahead of time? Can we do that today?
Well, there are some things informally that the county can do, but again, I was actually going to try and find this case before I left here, but since you've just asked me the question, I can't really answer you with a degree of certainty, because the law is a bit complicated, and it's not just an A or B. The short answer is I don't think you can begin putting up signs today that say students aren't allowed to park here. We can work with the school. They're probably charging a parking fee.
Yep.
And the students who don't want to pay the $30 a month or whatever it is to park on campus park for free, because it's only a block away and they
right.
can park there for free. But we can work with the school and we can begin looking at this, and we certainly don't want to repeat the delay time periods we had in the past, but you don't want to start down this path and then have to undo it, because it'll be more work to undo it than it will be to
That's
do
what
it.
Happened.
I understand. And it sounds like the solution that finally solved the problem there sounds like would be an appropriate solution here.
Well, we
in other
go
words,
WSU first.
Well,
we went to the school first.
Well, what does WSU have to do with this?
No.
The solution.
No. They had a parking problem.
The same parking problem.
I
that's what it has to do with it.
Translate that. That's what I mean. Okay.
Union.
Okay.
Union.
Okay.
Put the word union there.
Union High School. Yeah. So, likely, the whatever the process is, certainly the players involved need to be on the same page. Here's what I would like to be able to do, though, to allow the staff to make sure it's legally, it passes the Chris Horn test, and to make sure that it's good with the neighbors. And if that is all good, then I'd like to be able to just simply say, I make a motion, pass it today, and says we support whatever is going to be mutually agreeable with those parties. And you don't have to come back to us to get some final okay. If those parties are okay with it, we're okay with it. Can we do that, Chris?
Well, maybe. It depends on what the it is. Well, if, for example, you just want to post a sign saying be respectful of your neighbors and put those on the property, certainly we can do that. If the depending on the level of the what it is, maybe we can and maybe we can't, but we can work in that direction.
It sounds like what Mark just referred to is you put permitted parking and you give free parking to tickets to the coupons to the neighbors, and that would solve the problem probably. But the neighbors and the staff would be along with your office would have to bless that. And if that be something like that is workable, then you don't need to come back to us to final.
Well, we may actually, I'll be candid with you. I think actually you're going to need to take an official vote, because we'll have to pass a resolution that authorizes permit-only parking, because we're going to be potentially ticketing people if they don't have permits, and that requires, and we got to give notice.
And we did all that on the WSU.
And we also
we
got
did that
on
in
every
the WSU.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah.
Then what I'm fishing for
I know,
is to get her done.
Yep.
I'll
try
let
to
us know.
There.
Yeah, we've already got the sign templates out at the sign shop. We've got the parking tickets. We can get those, the permits. We can print new permits for those folks, too.
Great. So it sounds like you guys can work together and move it along. Bring it back when you're ready.
We made some mistake going forward with that, and that is you need to knock on every door. Someone has to be in charge of going to every door.
Actually, they already organized. They're 100%.
So we have a list of names.
A small neighborhood. All 100% of the neighbors have already agreed to this.
And we have them sign a paper.
They will.
They haven't.
They will. They just need us to give them the form, and they will.
With Mark and Peter partnering up, they'll get her done.
Make sure you get addresses and names. So
now,
that we can
addresses
send letters
and names, that's part of the process.
How to apply for permits.
That's right. Just what happened, because when we made that
parents
mistake.
Parents are going to be extremely upset when you start screwing around with them that are parking there.
Well,
that's why they built the parking lot.
Well, what happens is the neighbors will move to the next parking lot over.
Right.
And we'll be chasing neighborhoods.
Right. Yeah. Well, but eventually the distance gets so great that the kids won't do it because it's too far. That's
but
right.
Then one school finds out, then they want. I worked this issue with Commissioner Kelly.
We could be very successful if we stay with this to blow it out. All out of proportion.
I'm not trying.
No, I think we need to
but
start
I also don't
want to
underestimate what's involved.
Absolutely.
Power of precedent.
If we put the signs up and put no parking, then next thing somebody can knock on your door saying,
thank you, sir.
I can't park in front of my house. You didn't come and talk to me.
Peter and Mark, you'll solve it.
We won't make that mistake.
Well, you're still here, Chris. Do we have panhandling prepared for the consent agenda?
It's coming to a hearing. Coming to a hearing near
what,
you. Panhandling.
Oh.
I think we got a hearing date.
That was wasn't that the thing where we were afraid of the Girl Scout
hearing
cookies?
Hearing date. You
mean
on the agenda?
Changes to deal with that and make sure that the restriction applied in the right of way, so that we didn't have a situation where it could be applied to people innocently selling.
And they came and we talked about to some extent here, so I was expecting it to be on the action agenda.
We're teed up for a hearing, and Chris is working on the traffic end of the. That's what we were going to focus on. So that's where it is. Traffic end of the ordinance, and we should have a hearing on it probably in the next month.
Good.
Why so long?
Because
you need 10 days notice to the newspaper.
I need 10 days.
Well.
I don't need 30. I need 10.
We just need the ordinance.
Okay.
Well, we have the ordinance. You just have to put it in form.
Correct.
Yeah,
Chris's to-do list is about 100 pages
right
long.
Here. Right here. Jeez. Thanks, Chris.
We'll get it scheduled.
You're free, Chris. Thank you.
I'm tired of having this stuff on my desk.
Well, I can wheel in a big paper recycling.
It's a matter of which fire you want me to put out.
Yeah.
I have yeah. another question, since I seem to skip the turn. did RTC come to our legal staff and ask if we would be interested in representing the legal counsel, or be the legal counsel for the RTC?
What happened, I have been contacted by Matt Ransom from RTC, and we have historically, I think Lair Waters previously had done some work with RTC, so we have some history with them. We haven't, quite frankly, they were not as high a priority as the board and some of the other commitments we've made, and we've been short-staffed, and we just... In fact, okay. recently hired, we haven't even hired the seventh person.
They said they went out with an RFP.
Well, they may go out. I think they may go out.
They have chosen
a
legal firm. And my concern is that we have, whether we need more staff in our legal department here to do it, because what I understand is that we're going to have a legal department, a legal business, and we're not going to have the same counselor every time. We're going to have whoever they provide from that law firm. And so I'm concerned with that. And I wanted to make sure that they had contacted or offered the RFP to you.
They didn't offer it to us, but I think we've told Matt a couple different times that we've had conflicts because of the Northrop Davis litigation and some of the other priorities that the board's had. We just had conflicts that we couldn't know what we couldn't be at the place at their RTC meetings when they wanted them, or I've had other meetings that I've had to be at. So we've talked with them, but I'm not surprised they went out, but what you're telling me is new. Well, they haven't told me.
I was just disappointed that they went out when we have our own legal office here.
I think that if they had a chance to get it for free and we could guarantee them, and that may be something that's available once Brian starts and things settle down a little more. But, you know, part of this has been, this summer has been really tough on public records. We've spent a lot of attorney time on public records, and we've spent a lot of time getting ready for the election.
Okay, down there.
I won't even go into the names.
Okay.
But the point is, the election years are tough years for our office because, you know, the charter's been a big deal. There's been a lot of election kinds of issues.
That's okay. We had a couple $100,000 extra anyway.
I'm not going down that path.
Okay.
Take care of it.
Thanks, Chris.
I'll go ahead and finish my turn. My turn. I approve that. I'm looking for a gun ordinance. Who has the gun ordinance?
The concealed carry?
The concealed carry.
Emily was going to speak to you about coming up with some guidelines for you to approve.
Request
for carry.
Okay.
Well, I would like to have that brought back to the board so we can approve it. That's where we started from the board, and the board sent them back to sharpen their pencil on it, and I haven't seen it yet. So I would like to have that back to the board. And if we have to write it, sit here and write it, we will.
Okay.
Do all of our animal control people have their computers now?
I don't know. They ordered them some time ago.
Okay. I know it has been some time.
Yeah, I can get an answer for that.
And, again, we're waiting for panhandling to be assigned.
We have a hearing. We just don't have the ordinance. So Chris has been so busy.
I thought it was already put together.
Well, we had to redo it litigation that occurred elsewhere.
Well, it's not in Clark County.
It came back to us since that litigation.
Yeah, and so we're going to use that half with the traffic component.
Mm-hmm.
Chris is working on it. He's got to get the ordinance written.
But I'll have Rebecca schedule the hearing, and usually when we do that, that that puts the gas on it because he knows there's a set date.
Was there any other questions on payroll and car allowance? Or are we done?
We're done.
Tina and I have worked on that, and so we are noticing it because we want to do it before the election. So we're noticing it for October 28th. It'll be noticed, I think, as a public meeting, so it'll be a separate little thing.
Why don't we wait until the last minute?
Well, it's just, well, I don't know. We
I would really like to do it before that.
Well, I'll see what we can do.
If there's a hiccup along the way,
yeah.
We're toast.
Well,
you have to do it before the election. You don't wait until the week before election.
I'll check that. I'm not sure that it's before the election or before the person. You can't vote on your salary while in office. So we may have till the end of the year. I'll check on that. But
no,
either way, I
want to do it
yep.
in the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
Well, we don't have the end
done.
Of the year.
All we got to just fill in the blanks.
Yeah, we're noticing it. Rebecca noticed it today.
Just one correction. Because it's not a normal election, it's as soon as the election gets certified, they'll take it. So we don't have the end of the year.
We have until
November.
The 27th or so of November.
Yep,
if that's what it is. I thought it had to be before the election.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's election or certification,
so
but either way.
We need 10 days from today.
Yeah,
right?
We noticed it today.
Good.
We did.
All right. I want to find out what we're going to do with the property that we own on 139th, and I guess that's 99 or 15.
Oh, is that where the
15?
Miller Paint Company is?
Yes. And I'm looking at that, the way that road was built. They have pretty well destroyed the business there. When we put the road there, so shouldn't that be part of the cost of that roadway? I mean, right now it's probably worth half as much as it was before that road was put in there. So I'd like to have someone in charge of properties take a look at that, give me an idea of what we lost in damages. And if we're responsible for that damage or somebody else.
Well, so we bought property because it was necessary to commit it for the right-of-way.
We've owned that for years and years and years.
And we paid more for it than it's now worth. Is that your concern?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's just, it is a cost of the project. But
yeah.
if we sell that property, we're going to get fair market value for it, which could well be less than what we paid for it.
But is that the state portion of it, or is that the county portion?
I think the county. But
that would make a difference if that's the ramp for the state, then the state is responsible for the damages to the value of the property.
Yeah. Okay.
Check it out.
Huh?
You'll just have to check it out and find out.
Yeah.
I'd say that's several hundred thousand dollars sitting there.
Yeah. All
right.
I don't believe the property's been appraised since we acquired it, but I'll find out.
We've owned that for 5 or 6 years that I know of. Well before that road.
Right. But we won't know our loss until we sell it.
Yeah. So that's what I want to find out. If and when we're going to sell it, because it's, I believe it's vacant now. The state was using it for their on-site.
Yep.
And by the way, we did get paid rent for that. I was told that we did get paid rent while the state was using that. And we're all done with the letter for Joe. Does Joe understands that? Joe Levesque. I've talked to him.
Yeah.
I think he understands now that the information we provided, the only thing we might do to help him would be to help him draft a letter that would satisfy all the legislators.
Sure.
And
I have had a conversation with Nordenberg and David, and is trying to get lined up time to meet with Joe.
Okay.
Hey, Commissioner, to answer your question, all the animal control Surface Pro 3 tablets are in. IT is putting on the mobile iron and all the applications that need to be put on it.
Oh, right.
And so they'll be out in the field here very shortly.
All right. That's all I have.
Okay.
David?
I'm good.
Axel?
I think I'm good. It's the office, constituent-wise, is really busy right now.
It is. It was very interesting. I went to the 48 up there, and they were discussing the proposed charter. And they have no clue what we do. They think that we're doing everything different today than what we did when Bill Barron was here. And I was surprised.
Huh?
They're saying now that we don't use our administrator for anything. The yes on the charter people said, we just don't even use you anymore.
Well, I ought to go then.
You ought to go.
No way.
Be dead I don't want that load. You're doing, by the way, for the record, you are doing
some
excellent
point
job.
Here I got to go represent the environmental director, Benton,
yeah.
Pretty quick.
Oh, good.
What's that?
I say pretty quick, I got to go represent environmental director Benton here.
I want you
going
to
meet with
I'm
him?
I'm sure he wants
no,
you to do a good job.
Representing.
Peter, do you have anything for us?
I'm pretty good.
Okay.
Oh.
Mr. Administrator, you have the hammer.
Yeah, we have a request for a work session. The Substance Abuse Advisory Board, with support from Clark County Department of Community Services,
yep.
would like to brief you on their program and solicit your continued support, et cetera, et cetera. A rather distinguished list of members. I would recommend you give them an audience.
Great. We're having that here?
It'll be in, you know, the hearing room or the training room,
Great.
Depending on the size of the audience we expect. And then there are three vacancy requests, two from Public Works, one for a fellow, Steve Riggs, resigned. He's our equipment maintenance supervisor, essentially the shop foreman, make sure all of our mechanics are
qualified.
They're productive and, you know, doing the right things and maintaining county vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did he retire?
He resigned.
He left to go someplace else?
I don't know where he went.
How many years did he have?
I don't know.
Oh.
I've never heard the name Steve Riggs. You know,
I'm thinking that we had one not in the last few years that we moved up. You know, I'm the one I'm thinking was in charge of the roads, not the equipment. He was a maintenance supervisor. So this is why somebody different.
Yeah, this is the shops where we maintain the equipment.
If we need them, we ought to replace them.
I have a green light for me.
Okay. And, you know, that equipment is so vital to the performance
yeah.
of our public work mission. We just simply have to maintain our sheriff
so his
and
last,
our assessors. And, sorry?
His last day is the 24th of this month.
Right, but we have to put a recruitment out.
Absolutely.
And okay, so that's a
good.
Go.
Mm-hmm.
Highway maintenance specialist, heavy equipment operator.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to do road maintenance.
Build that infrastructure, right?
Yep. Got to care for it. So that's a go also?
Yep.
Okay, and then Gary Bickett, a program manager in public health, is retiring. Funded by non-general fund, grant revenue and health fee revenue.
Green light.
Okay, 100%. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's all I had, Commissioner Mielke.
All right, we are done.
Hey, thank you.
15 minutes early.
All right, appreciate that. I don't have to speed.